Thanks for inviting me into your home. Long haul truck, RV, camper, taxi, your parents' well-appointed rec room with the simulated wood paneling, electric fireplace, and the painting of dogs playing poker. Your loft, that greasy spoon just off the interstate, and your cabin in the woods. Welcome to Coast AM, the best in late-night talk radio. I'm Richard Serrett, filling in for George Norrie. And tonight, this morning, we're coming to you live from Coast's Toronto, Canada affiliate, News Talk 1010 In-Depth Radio. Open lines in the second half of this transmission, and here's how that works. You gather together your spine-tingling tales, your spellbinding stories, your queries, questions, puzzles, dilemmas, conundrums, dissertations, comments, spiels. Well, you get the idea. Practice in front of the mirror if you have time. Figure out what you want to talk about. Then you climb on top of the roof, maybe shinny up the TV antenna with a flashlight. Signal me as I fly over in the mothership. Two flashes means beam me up, incidentally. And then you'll scramble into the co-pilot seat and help me steer this magnificent vessel toward the third star to the right and straight on till morning. And I have every confidence you'll bring your A material. You'll raise the hackles on the back of my neck. You'll make me go, We'll all go to bed having learned something, having been amazed. And then we'll send a copy of this program to the Broadcast Museum for posterity. That's the general idea. In hours one and two, when I graduated from college and found myself working at a talk radio station, actually this very station, News Talk 1010, it was known as CFRB back then in the early 90s, I was producing talk radio and I came across a book by Preston Nichols called The Montauk Project. Now, we didn't have anything approximating coast to coast on the station back then, so there was really no one to pitch it to, but I read it. It was a deeply disturbing, at times confusing and convoluted tale about a decommissioned U.S. air base called Camp Hero, located at the eastern tip of Long Island in a quaint town called Montauk. And beneath the radar tower, the most prominent feature on the base, it was rumored there was a vast network of tunnels and vaults going down level after level. And when within this labyrinth, it's alleged, horrible human experiments were conducted. Young people from all over America who had vanished ended up there, below the surface of Camp Hero in Montauk, where they were beaten, sometimes to within an inch of their lives, drugged, and subjected to unimaginable torture. The purpose? To fracture their psyches and induce a dissociative disorder. In short, mind control. These missing and tortured kids became known as the Montauk Boys and were allegedly turned into unwitting super soldiers, spies, assassins, capable of unimaginable feats. How many? Nobody seems to know, but it could be as high as a million. But it gets stranger still. The mystery of Montauk and Camp Hero may also involve time travel, aliens, and Nazis, and even the Philadelphia experiment. And the citizens of the town of Montauk may also have been unwitting and unwilling guinea pigs in some sort of super-secret, twisted experiment. My guest coming up next is a filmmaker who's been trying to peel back the layers of this Montauk mystery and what lies beneath the Sage radio or radar tower at Camp Hero for a decade and a half. Christopher Garitano joins me next. Welcome to the Audio Imaginarium. Come on in, weary traveler. Hang your cloak on a peg. Grab a stool and come gather around the fire. There are stories to be told, and you are among friends. I'm Richard Serrett, sitting in for George Norrie, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Why don't you stay a while? Christopher Garitano produced and directed several award-winning films, including the 2005 film Horror Business and the 2015 docudrama Montauk Chronicles, which received awards for Best Documentary at the 2015 Philip K. Dick Film Festival and Best Picture at the Celluloid Film Festival. Garitano is the creator of the comic strip and anticipated graphic novel South Texas Blues, originally published in Fangoria magazine in 2012. In 2016, Garitano collaborated with Texas Crew Productions and History Channel as an executive producer, host, and director of recreations on the television movie The Dark Files. Garitano is also currently developing a new scripted series with Digia Studios. And now, he's passionately diving into his new dream project, Strange World, a boots-on-the-ground travel channel series that investigates the legends, mysteries, and first-person accounts that fuel this country's creepiest conspiracy theories and unexplained occurrences. Christopher Garitano, welcome to Coast AM. How are you?
Pretty good, Richard. Thank you. Thanks for having me tonight.
For those not familiar with Camp Hero in Montauk, give me a brief history of this sort of abandoned U.S. Air Force base.
Well, you know, I was introduced to the town of Montauk when I was a kid, and it was simply just a vacation town in New York. That's where everybody went in the summertime. And it was, you know, it had a movie theater and beaches and resorts and restaurants. And there were, you know, things to do in the summertime. That was it. And there was just one time I was there with my uncle, and we were walking down the rocky beach at Montauk Point. And I was collecting seashells and different colored rocks, and there was this military guard that came out of nowhere and told us we couldn't go any further. And so that set my curiosity in regard to what else was there. My uncle explained to me that there was some kind of military base that, you know, it was restricted and we couldn't go any further. And I kind of put it out of my head until, until the 90s when Preston Nichols' book came out. When I first read the book, I wasn't convinced that there was anything happening there outside of it being a vacation town. It wasn't until I had the opportunity a few years later that I could sit down with Preston and speak with him, because I think the most fascinating thing was there was several elderly men, including Preston Nichols and a man named Alfred Bielek, that claimed they were hired, they were recruited for a secret sub-level government program underneath that town that I had vacations in as a child. And so the prospect as a filmmaker to sit down with these elderly men and hear it from their mouths and look in their eyes and get something genuine was the beginning of all of it for me, because I had more of an interest in making an epic movie about the American Sasquatch stories. I just didn't have the money at the time, and I lived close to Montauk, and a friend of mine was obsessed with the idea behind the Montauk Project. Nobody had made a documentary about it. It really wasn't getting much attention. It was a very independently published book, as you know, and the Montauk Project was kind of, it was popular in idiosyncratic circles, but it really wasn't a phenomenon at the time that I started my movie. So that's where it started. Just the idea that I could sit with Preston Nichols and sit down with Alfred Bielek and hear their story from their mouth, that was 10 times more fascinating than anything I read in the book.
And even before the publication of the Montauk Project, which came out in the early 90s, there were townsfolk, young people who knew about the so-called legends and the rumors and the allegations about what was going on at Camp Hero. And you introduce us to some of those both in the Dark Files series and Strange World. Tell me about some of these people, what they remember, even as far back as the late 70s, growing up in Montauk.
Right. So those particular people that you're talking about, they held my fascination and they inspired me to look further into this, because at first all I had was those three gentlemen that were telling the tale. And so that, I think, sparked a lot of people's skepticism, because it was only these three guys telling the story. That's not true. And I found out later there were many other people that were telling this tale before that book was published. And those are the people you're speaking of. So I found them further into my investigation. There was everybody from local fishermen that I spoke to, that one gentleman said that he had a UFO experience, that he was out on a shark fishing vessel. He was out all night. He was coming back. He said the sky was clear. He was getting closer and closer to Montauk Point, which is exactly where Camp Hero is resting above on this hill, you know. And the Sage Radar Tower is up there. That's one of the most iconic thing, and a lot of fishermen see that as they're coming back into shore. And so as he was coming back in, he said this was, and this was very close to where the tower was hovering above the water. He said this vessel came out of the water, hovered above his fishing vessel, and then took off into the sky. Now, okay, I mean, we could say this is a story, but he insisted when I interviewed him to completely have his voice concealed, his face concealed, and he spent quite a lot of time telling me this story and insisting that the story needed to come out. The man later had a stroke, but I know he's legit. He truly is a fisherman out there.
Did we lose you? Are you there still, Christopher?
Yeah, can you hear me? Yes, I'm still here.
Christopher Garitano.
Yes.
I think we momentarily lost communication. Maybe it's it's that Sage radar tower interfering.
This seems to happen sometimes when I tell these stories.
I have no doubt.
So what was the last thing you heard?
Well, you were talking about this fisherman who witnessed this UFO coming out from off the point of Montauk, and then he later, you seemed to think he was very credible. Later, he had a stroke, and that's about when we lost communication.
Yeah, this is a guy, he had a family, he had a really good job at a television network, and in addition to that, he was a commercial fisherman, and he seemed completely of sound mind, did not want his identity revealed. And so I respected his wishes, and I shot an interview with him out on a boat, actually, right outside, right in the area that he claimed to have seen the ship that hovered above his boat. And so, you hear these stories all the time. All of your listeners hear stories like this all the time, but then we're consistently denied of the truth and denied of these stories and told that they're ridiculous. Well, they're not, they're just simply not. And I think it's important. There are several things, just in my opinion, everybody has their own perspective on this, but I feel like credible witness is just as strong as hard evidence. And a credible witness is somebody with something to lose. In this case, this gentleman had a reputation. He was worried that if he told anything, he would lose his job. And he seemed to have, I had dinner with him several times just to kind of observe his behavior. And he seemed to be genuinely frightened of telling the story. Now, people tell UFO stories all the time, but it's that particular base that I think the fear, when I speak to people who are in association with something that may have happened there, they're afraid to tell the story. I've had several people want their identities concealed in regard to that place, because if that truth ever comes out, that means there were people that were kidnapped and murdered for a government experiment. And I think that is what's that's what they're attempting to conceal.
You mentioned, this UFO incident, which is just sort of another element to the story that seems so, it's like a one-stop shopping for all things, weird and paranormal and unexplained, all centered around a Camp Hero. I also wanted to talk to you about this witness that you interviewed. I think it was in a diner somewhere, and he was kind of cast in shadow, and he talked about how even he suspected or heard the legends of back in the 70s that the entire population of this little community in Montauk were perhaps being targeted themselves in some sort of strange experiment. Tell me about that conversation.
So that was for Strange World, and it was the very first episode of the series. And this gentleman just happened to be there. We were speaking with one woman who had a lot of different stories she heard over the years, so we were hoping she would just kind of share them with us. And this gentleman is somebody that she knew, and he said, okay, well, I have something I want to tell you. And his perspective was that he was 100% confirming that whatever program or whatever group was up there outside of the military working at that base, they were designing and conducting a variety of experiments on the town itself. Now, I'd heard this before. We read this in the book, and that we were told by Preston Nichols and Alfred Bielek and Duncan Cameron that the SAGE radar tower was being used as an amplified mind control device, in addition to many other things. And in this case, this gentleman was saying there were chemicals that were being administered, and there were things being sprayed on them, and there were strange behavior for people in the town. It's, look, as time goes on, I have a feeling that we'll see more, and we'll hear more of these stories. We'll see more witnesses come forward. And when we were making the Dark Files for History Channel, we brought a company called GeoView there. They were geophysicists. We used several devices to look underneath the ground, one of which was called electric resistivity imagery, and it took a vertical slice of imagery beneath the ground. And what Michael, who ran the company, found was that there was a man-made structure far beneath the ground, maybe 20, 30 feet to the ceiling of whatever this structure was. And he confirmed that it was a giant room. Now, this wasn't some kind of air shaft, access tunnel, storage room, whatever. I heard skeptics claim a whole variety of things. They have no place to claim. We had the best evidence. And so if this was just a vertical slice, and this is outside of the gate, there's a perimeter that they wouldn't let us pass through. They had every effort. They were making every effort to keep us away from the perimeter of that tower, which I believe is a hotspot if you have these devices. I truly believe, and I strongly suggest to anybody conducting an investigation there, you need to bring the geophysical equipment past that gate, around the perimeter, and spend a full day, if you can, with that equipment, and you will find that there is an enormous structure underneath the ground.
And this is important because this is important because you have the blueprints. I'm not sure how you obtained them, but you have the official blueprints that shows the SAGE radar tower there, which is the most prominent feature in Camp Hero. And according to those blueprints, there is nothing subterranean, nothing beneath the surface, according to the blueprints and according to the government's official account.
Nothing at all. We've been told that several times by several different officials. However, when we were there, and we obviously had to sign for permits, History Channel, when we were there at History Channel, we were approached by their security. And the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers was there on that exact day in this great drilling experiment. Just so happened to be on the same exact day we were there. They had not been there in 13 years, and they were there all over the place. They had field botanists and scientists and all this. It just seemed like one big smokescreen to keep us away once again. We came back again for Strange World for the Travel Channel. First episode was the only episode about Montauk, was our first episode. And same thing happened again. We experienced a resistance from the people who were running security over there. And here's the thing, if nothing is there, why such a resistance to keep us away when we seem to be the only ones with this equipment that can see underneath the ground? Sooner or later, we're going to, regardless of all the stories, what must be done is that we need to prove that there is this structure underneath the ground. Once that's proven, that opens the door for everything else.
Right. And you did meet, we're coming up on the bottom of the hour here. We're going to break momentarily. And when we come back, we'll talk about this gentleman, Brian, who is a local, and he's been exploring the space beneath the SAGE radar tower and has some interesting video evidence, which you present on both the Dark Files and the Strange World episode dealing with Montauk. And again, this seems to, at least he caught a glimpse of something under there. I don't know how many layers it goes down. Some have claimed it goes down maybe 9 levels. So we'll talk about what Brian was able to witness, and then we'll get into some of the extraordinary claims, legends, rumors, allegations about what was happening beneath that SAGE radar tower. The evil, twisted experimentation, mind control. Now, taking us into the break, here are the Rolling Stones and Memory Motel, which is about a hotel in Montauk. Back with more of the Coast to Coast when we come back. Stay with us. Welcome back. Say hello on Twitter at Richard Serrett, S-Y, because I love you, R-E-T-T. Gigantic dust towers on Mars could explain how the Red Planet lost its water. These sprawling towers of dust can reach heights of 50 miles during global-scale dust storms on Mars, and you can read more about this fascinating story in the news section up at coasttocoastam.com, where our webmaster, Greg Bishop, has posted that and other tantalizing tidbits. Back with more of my conversation with Christopher Garitano as we peel back the layers of the mystery at Montauk and Camp Hero, right here on Coast to Coast AM. Christopher Garitano stays with us, and the Travel Channel series is called Strange World, that investigates the legends, mysteries, and first-person accounts that fuel this country's creepiest conspiracy theories and unexplained occurrences. And we're talking about Montauk and Camp Hero. And there are a number of locals who have been investigating this really since the 90s. And you introduced us to one of them. I think his name is Brian, who actually sort of made sport of avoiding the security there at Camp Hero, jumping the fence and actually exploring beneath the SAGE radar tower. Tell me about what he found.
Oh, Brian's fantastic. Well, his name is Brian Minnick, and he it all started when he was a teenager. He was just messing around, hanging out at Camp Hero. I mean, like, Montauk is kind of a remote town, and you could safely assume that this is even like deep suburbia. The kids are really bored. There's nothing to do. And so you have this spooky legend surrounding this this abandoned derelict military base. And where else would you go if you were 14, 15 years old? So this is where it started for Brian. But him and his buddies did not expect to see and be chased by helicopters, be chased by security, not just because they were trespassing, but because they may have grabbed something crucial. So that, Brian claims to have ran out of there with evidence at one point, but he spent a lot of years going there as a kid, was even, I think, nearly arrested. And then later on, as he got older, it became an honest, independent investigation on his part that's lasted now. I believe he's in his 40s, and I know he's putting together an incredible book, probably the best book on the subject. When it's finished, I believe it will be, because he's done all the research and he's explored the base firsthand. But the most crucial evidence that he collected, there were two parts. One was video footage when he was horsing around as a kid, but he got footage of pieces of the base that revealed, hard evidence, revealed that there is something underneath the ground. And like you had said before, Richard, there were so many officials that say, including the blueprints, that claim there's nothing underneath the ground. The video says otherwise. And then in addition to that, there was a structure, and I think this is one of the most compelling pieces of evidence. There was a structure. It's no longer there. Right now, it's a picnic area. But this structure on the interior, and Brian has pictures and video of this, were several rooms, all deliberately and professionally painted. How do we know this? Of course, it doesn't clear to the ceiling. Things were taped off, obviously. Light sockets were taped off, and these patterns were too complex just to be a bunch of kids messing around. Nobody would have done this. And it's also in line with past drug experiments. There were several different patterns. Each room had a different pattern that surrounded the room. All the walls were painted. And so we had checked in with a few people. Some people say, in regard to Timothy Leary's colleagues and people like that that had experimented with these psychedelics for government purposes and for mind control purposes. Some of them claim that they weren't familiar with these patterns, but two of them did. And I think this is enough evidence to at least support a very serious investigation, funded, and also spark the concern of people, that may doubt this. You know, a lot of the people that doubt the possibility of a government experiment at Montauk also, I'm sure, not aware of Holmesburg Prison or the Tuskegee medical experiments. But our government, past and even present, has clearly are responsible for things like this. So if you can prove that those things happened, then why not believe it happened at Montauk? It would have been the perfect place for this. And that's where my mind is always at. Yeah, there are some extraordinary claims, everything from a variety of extraterrestrial beings underneath the ground to time travel experiments to just this, an extreme amount of soldiers and spies being created at Montauk, being put into society, and then turning into a global conspiracy. I take this very cautiously. I don't know what to believe, but I do believe that there is something hidden at Montauk to this day. And so it leads me to believe that there's something severe that happened, and it's probably in line with Holmesburg Prison or the Tuskegee medical experiments, where things were illegally conducted, that there was human subjects that were brought against their will to this place. And that is what I believe happened there.
We won't know. But, and the people who are being swung because of the power that Google has, Facebook too, but Google, by and large, can swing elections. Now, here we have an independent counsel investigating Russia from 2016. Russia, to my knowledge, I don't follow it that greatly, but to my recollection, they spent about $100,000 on the elections, and some of the money was spent in favor of Hillary Clinton, and some of it was spent for Donald Trump. And I don't believe that could possibly have, if $2 million was spent for Trump by the Russians, I don't believe it could have swung the election. And with the amount of money that is spent in political elections in this country, no way that would have had any impact. Google can do that without spending any money whatsoever, simply by changing its algorithms. And that's what Robert Epstein has pointed out. And his work is meticulous and breathtaking, because I don't know how this midterm election is going to turn out. But I am convinced if nothing is done between now and 2020, Google will decide who wins the election.
Right. Now, meanwhile, Google, were they not hired by the People's Public Republic of China
to censor the Chinese for over 10 years? That's what first brought them to my attention. That's what was so outrageous to me, that they were working on behalf of censorship by the Chinese government. They took a little break from it. I like to think I might have had some impact on that, because I was such a thorn in their side for so many years. It got embarrassing, quite honestly, because even the New York Times was doing stories about it. They took a little break from that, but they're back. They're back in China, and they're back negotiating with the Chinese to do the worst kind of censorship in the world. Censorship as overt as you can't mention Tiananmen Square. You can't mention dissidents. You just won't get the information if you're in China.
Right. Now, Google has revoked domain registration services for certain, there were some neo-Nazi publications, the Daily Stormer, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that's the next arrow in their quiver, that they're going to start revoking domain registration services for conservative publications?
It's possible. If there's no accountability. Okay, and so far there really hasn't been. We've had congressional hearings. We've had the White House making some noise, the Justice Department doing some preliminary inquiries. But I have to tell you something. This is, we started out by saying this was like an existential threat for WND.com. This is an existential threat for freedom of speech, freedom of press, freedom of religion, and free elections in this country. And I don't exaggerate. I am not hyping this. I am telling you from my own personal observations and the research that I've done. And, you know, Dr. Robert Epstein is a great guy. You know, you can say, well, Farah's just some kind of crazy right-winger, and, you know, he's going off. This guy is on the other side ideologically, but has scarier information than I do. He's scaring me. So,
do you want to see the Justice Department come down on Google and Facebook the way that Teddy Roosevelt came down on Standard Oil?
Yeah, I want to see them broken up. I think it's the only safe thing we can do. And, you know, I think the competition will be better for everybody, quite honestly. You can't, this is a cartel. You know, they work, you know, if you had one and not the other, then, you know, then we'd be better off. If you had, you know, some kind of ideological balance among all of these companies, we might have, but we don't have that. The deck is stacked against Republicans to such an extent, I can't believe the Republicans in power, in the White House, in Congress, are doing nothing about this. And one of the reasons why is, number one, the biggest lobby in Washington is Google, the one that spreads the most money around, including some crumbs that they give to Republicans. And none of these guys want to say anything about it. It's just unbelievable.
Well, Google was recently accused of their staff, and they were recorded holding, you know, these meetings about how they were going to fiddle with the algorithms to filter out, for example, when President Trump was bringing in these extreme vetting rules for certain countries, mm-hmm. and people wanted to search that up, and certain pro-immigration sites came up only. And they said officially, well, no, we talked about it. It was just an idea. It was just a brainstorming idea, but we didn't actually do it. Can we believe them? Can we trust Google?
Well, I think I think they have shown restraint so far. I think they would like to do a whole lot more to impact the culture, impact, you know, the political culture, impact. I think that every, you know, that from the top executives on down, the corporate culture at Google, for instance, Facebook, same thing, is so slanted that way that they have to show some restraint, or the impact would be so obvious, so overwhelming, it would change things overnight in this country.
So what's going on with the net neutrality battle?
You know, I don't really think that that's a problem insofar as the main problem we're talking about. I think it would potentially, it could have made things more comfortable for Google and Facebook, which is the last thing you want to do when you're dealing with monopolies like this. Quite honestly, these guys are making so much money, they don't even know what to do with it. They just simply don't even know what to do with it. That's dangerous. But net neutrality would probably make their life easier, make them more profitable. That's my analysis of it.
If all things remain equal going into 2019, what is the fate of WND?
All things equal, as long as our people, our core audience, which is still very, very substantial, I gave you some numbers that, you know, sounded awful, and they are. But at the same time, you know, we've been around for so long. We have an organic audience, an audience that's loyal, that, you know, comes to WND every single day. And as long as they continue to support us with contributions, I'm begging every single day. That's the only way we're still here, begging. And they have answered the call. We started back in January of last year. And, you know, that's why I don't mind telling you how bad things are. You know, for a businessman like me to share on national radio how bad this has gone. And it's not something cyclical. The irony is we had 8 years of Obama. We did great. Trump comes along, who we liked, and it's killing us as a result. Not his fault, but that is the, the thing that we're facing right now. And, you know, we're just hanging on. We have one third the employees that we had a year ago, just to give you another indicator. It's hard.
And are you laying people off again?
No, we have nobody to lay off. Nobody better leave at this point. We have the core people left, and we need them all to stay. And they've been great at dealing with, you know, many of the adversities that we have at the company.
How are you treated by Twitter? Let's say you want to tweet one of your headlines.
Yeah.
Do you get blocked?
Nobody gets it. Doesn't matter how many. If I have 10 million followers, they decide how many people get. It's the same way Facebook works. We don't even bother. I mean, you know, we routinely go through the process. So, you know, maybe maybe out of the millions that we have, or the hundreds of thousands of friends or whatever we have, you know, a small percentage get it. We see almost nothing as a result from what we do.
There are people attempting to create new browsers,
right,
new social media platforms.
Yes.
More sort of conservative friendly. Do you have much hope that they'll succeed?
Google has 90% of the market. So nothing's going to happen in my lifetime to see that change. Now, there are other experiments like, you know, a new internet. completely new internet. That has short-range potential. I'm all for it. I'm gung-ho. I'm waiting for it to happen, it would be a great thing, because there are only two things that can possibly happen to change what I'm discussing right now, and that is Google and Facebook are broken up, and we sort of start over again, and that would allow for the competition, okay? Nobody can compete with Google. It's a monopoly. You get it? I mean, you don't compete with them. They have all the money in the world. You can't compete with them. And plus, they're into so many different things. They're just not a search engine anymore. They control, between Facebook and Google, they control at least 75% of the digital advertising market. They decide who gets paid out of their chump change that they throw to the publishers. It's a nightmare, and the only things that can change this is breaking them up, or somebody comes up with a whole new platform that is not controlled by them any longer, and that's a more distinct possibility in the relatively near future.
Well, Joseph, I wish I had, you know, more encouraging news, but just all we can say is hang in there, hang tough. I know you will. You have. You're a survivor. And I personally enjoy it. WND. It's kind of my go-to news source. So all the best.
Don't feel sorry for me, but feel sorry for America. Free speech, freedom of the press, free elections if we don't fix this problem, Richard. And I appreciate
all right.
your show very much. God bless.
God bless, Joseph. All right, we will discuss the Garden of Eden, what really went down in the garden. When we come back, here's Audience, Indian Summer from their album House on the Hill, an overlooked gem featuring the unique sound of this British art rock band. Back with more on Coast to Coast AM.